The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back to What's Next. I'm Laura Fraser, and I'm sat with my co-host Laura Podelska and our guest host Sarah Malindwa. And today we've got a really special episode because we've each picked a topic that has interested us, that we're a little bit passionate about, and we decided to have a discussion between the three of us and find out what's next.
Exactly. I'm going to just take it from here. Thank you, Laura, for the introduction. So this has riled me up all week, and I'm thinking it has riled up most people, hopefully. So there is a new law that has come into place in Texas where abortion is illegal after the 6 week. This law, which is one of the nation's most restrictive, is not directly meant to penalize women seeking abortions as such. However, it bans abortions after the detection of a fetal heartbeat. So the law's broad language suggests lawsuits may be brought by private citizens against those who aid, abet, or perform abortions. Now, that includes someone who may be, you know, helping a patient cover the medical cost of terminating a pregnancy or provides them transportations. And also, well, obviously after the 6 weeks gestation, but what it really is, it's rape, it's incest, and none of that will matter anymore. And that is what makes my blood boil. Sarah.
You know, this conversation has been happening for a while now, hasn't it? There were talks in the US about, you know, this law that they were trying to pass, but because there was such uproar, I genuinely didn't think it would pass because of, you know, the massive backlash that it's had.
And Supreme Court not even pushing back on it either, right, post the law going through.
What shocked me is that most women, and I'm going to be really open, count myself to it, don't know they're pregnant at 6 weeks.
Of course, absolutely.
And this is it, isn't it?
So, and they've done it in a really conniving way, because it almost implies that, oh, well, we've given you, a cut-off point, so you can make that choice, and then afterwards it's illegal. But then how many women notice it? You normally notice your period is late after, about 6 weeks after your last period, unless, you know, you're somebody who's really on it. But most women wouldn't know they're pregnant at 6 weeks. And they know this, and it's just interesting, like, the cut-off point that they've made it. But like you said, it doesn't include people who've been sexually assaulted, incest, you know. And does it count? At what age is this capped? So if somebody's underage. So these are all things that are really not taken into consideration at all.
I mean, there's so many different discussions going on around this, and I found it really, really interesting to look at it from different viewpoints that it's coming from. Not only is the main discussion going on that men should be making laws around women's bodies, but there's also a whole classism issue. So those that are in government making these policies are wealthy people. And if their wife or daughter got raped and fell pregnant, they would find a way to have an abortion.
Correct. So this is the thing.
Or their teenage daughter.
Yeah, you can obviously drive into another county, but that is a privilege.
Exactly.
Some people don't have. A 16-year-old girl in school does not have the privilege to cross the border.
What it does is it further solidifies cycles. So basically, if you're poor, you'll stay poor, because how much does it cost to raise a kid? You know, and they're the most vulnerable people in the lower economic areas that won't have the facilities or the resources to be able to find loopholes around these laws. Yeah. So then they're the ones that are going to be stuck with this burden. But we also watched a really, really interesting video from Tova. You can say who Tova is.
Yeah, Tova Lee, good friend, great friend, who's been on our show loads of times, actually. She's just, incredible woman. But she's posted a video, and it's a video that's been watched over and over again.
So the video was super interesting because she went and analysed the word pro-life. But she said, you're only pro-life to the unborn life in the belly, not for the woman that is unable to look after the kid that might be psychologically, emotionally... They said if you were pro-life, you'd put resources into place for people that are not equipped. You'd help with adoptions. Mm. You would do all of these things that would make the quality of life of these lives that we bring in. She said, you're also not pro-life because you don't care about the life of the woman that is birthing this kid.
How many children in first world countries, as we know, are living below the, you know, below the poverty line?
Girls, I want to put something forward. We said this podcast would be transient. We said this podcast would make it personal because what's the point if we don't put our lives into it? I don't know about you girls. I have been in a situation where I didn't say no, and I didn't say yes, and it was weird, and I won't call it rape because it wasn't. But imagine you are in a situation like that.
Yeah, something unpleasant has happened.
Something unpleasant happens, and you don't...
And the emotional trauma that you're already going through. And
right, I'm sorry, I'm struggling for words.
To find the words,
But I think a lot of women may relate to the fact that sometimes you have a night where you come home
and you're put in a position where you don't feel like you can, you know, because sometimes,
especially
you know, we talk about consent.
Right?
Of course, absolutely. You know, as all of us three sitting here, we're all grown women, you know, so we've lived life, we've experienced, you know, we've been through some shit.
Yeah, we've been through some shit.
And, you know, you cannot pull the wool over our eyes. But when I think back to when I was, you know, in my late teens, when I was in my 20s, I was not the woman that I am today. I was in, like, just like you said.
Right.
You know, I've been in a couple of situations where I can't fully say I consented, but I felt like I had to maybe do something or be in a situation that I fully didn't. I knew I didn't consent to it, but I felt like I had no other option.
Right. So imagine you had gotten pregnant and you live in Texas. And then what?
And then what?
And also, I think I'm actually really interested to hear about the two of you. Mm. So for me, there's a lot of shame around the whole issue of abortion, sex, consent. It is a fine, thin line.
Yeah, the lines are skewed.
Well, because also there's a huge religious element that is brought into it, which, you know, not everyone who is religious subscribes to that point of view. And if you were looking at statistics, actually, the Christian people in, I think it was in Texas right now, or whether it was the whole of U.S., were the ones having the most abortions. So
we saw that statistic was that crazy.
And you know, and it's not just Christianity, it's all religions.
Of course.
It's all religions. You know, there's, I get it in the scripture, there is this pro-life statement, but we have to also understand that the way that people live has changed.
You
have to interpret things for now, not for a time that is where everything's changed so much.
So Sarah, I want to quickly go to you. You work for the sex clinic. On television, I call the sex clinic,
right,
that you're part of. For those listeners of us, which are many, including myself, who don't know what 6 week is, what does that actually mean?
Yeah, is it from the start?
Yeah, six is that
weeks?
A heartbeat?
Is it 6 weeks from the day you had sex, or 6 weeks from your last period, or how do they measure it as well?
So it'd probably be 6 weeks from your last period, but again, this differs country to country, state to state, and all these things. So, you know, 6 weeks could be the last day, the first day of your last period. It could be the last. It could be the time that you had the intercourse, where you could count back to say, okay, this is when I think I got pregnant. So it actually varies, and this is what I come to find as well. At 6 weeks, you can find a heartbeat, so it's a fetus at 6 weeks. But in most countries, and I know in the UK, that at 6 weeks, I believe it's up to 12 weeks. I have to double check that. You can take an abortion pill.
Correct.
Yeah, and there's you can get a medical abortion, or you can get a surgical abortion, and that's the cutoff point in the UK.
The pills out?
So we only deal with sexual health. So let's say I get a patient come in, and it's happened loads and loads of times, where, you know, go through a questionnaire, you ask when the last period was, or when the last time they had unprotected sex, and then you think, okay, well, it's worth doing a pregnancy test, you know, to check, and then it will come back pregnant, or you know, let's say it comes back as a positive, then from then on it's up to, you know, we'll cancel the patient, let them know what their options are. And then if they know there and then, I'd never really encourage anyone to make a decision there and then, because of course you've just found out and it's a life-changing thing. So we give them the options, all the reading tools that they need, all the links to the online, you know, information, get them to think about it, and then whatever decision to make. So if they decide to continue with the pregnancy, you refer them to their GP. If they decide to go through with the termination, then you refer them to Brooks, which is one of the other sexual health and abortion clinics that we have in
Sarah,
the UK.
Sarah, can I ask you, when you have a woman come in, and sometimes it's not just about the abortion, it's not just about or the pregnancy, there's a lot more to that.
Yes.
So, what do you say? How do you counsel? Because
Is that even your role? Do you take that on as a role for yourself?
Yeah, so you would. Mostly because let's say somebody comes in and you've already built this rapport with them as a sort of clinician and patient, and they feel super comfortable with you and they've already disclosed this information. You want as least people to sort of be involved in that process. So if they need sort of a lot more counselling or therapy that I can't do within that session, because, you know, we've got a clinic full or whatever, then I'll refer them for a proper appointment for that specifically. But if they were to present with me, then I'll take the time and we'll go through the whole counselling situation. But my normal approach is I would just sort of get them to talk, and I think listening is the best part of is the best part of a conversation. So sort of just getting them to give you as much information as they feel comfortable with, and then from doing that you'd be surprised how much they'll actually divulge, like, you know, stuff at home. They could, you know, disclose information about their partner, they don't feel safe, or, you know, they're not with a partner, they want to keep it, all sorts of different scenarios. So my job as a sexual health, as one of the senior nurses there, is to counsel the patients, help them to reassure them. For my job is really, it's not to make a decision for them. The decision is completely up to them. And it's just about making them feel comfortable and making them feel like whatever decision they make, it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
Thank
okay.
You,
There's
Sarah.
No right or wrong decision. It's whatever's,
you.
You know, whatever's for you.
I wanted to know,
for sure.
For you girls, because I know we have so many topics to go through, what does everyone think? Where is this going to go? Because this is a show called What's Next.
Mm.
I would have never in a million years thought that this law would get passed.
Mm.
It sounds like now it will get passed in many more states.
Yeah.
So for me, what's next is that we need to stand up. We need to get up and we need to actually,
yeah.
We need to be very loud and be very heard.
Yeah.
And that's what's next for me personally.
Mm.
And what's next for the US, I'm worried. Lara.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very similar to you. What's next is everybody needs to be speaking about this, because once a precedent of a law is passed, as you said, it makes it much easier for other places to pass it. And it's very easy to say, oh, it's not happening to us, but it's not happening to you until it does.
Yeah,
so you stand up now and you make it heard that this is not okay, that, you know, women need their choices, it's their body. You know, men are screaming about the choice of a vaccine in America. You know, and they're like, I will not have something forced.
My body.
Your body. Okay, well, you try birthing a child that you don't want inside you, okay? And you won't have a vaccine. So thank you very much.
Bravo.
Yeah,
absolutely. Because it's the same people who would be anti-vaxxers.
That's what I'm saying.
The
anti-vaxxers over there.
Yeah.
Before
we have to cut it off, Sarah.
Yeah, so, I mean, looking at America, where this, you know, where this law has been passed, if you look at it historically, and like we said, this law is very much going to affect people from low income families. We've seen how people from low income families are affected when it comes to gun crime, when it comes to all sorts of things in society, and so this is just another, you know, layer on top of already a massive cake for people in low-income, families and communities in America. So it's only going to go the way it went when they had the crack pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, this is how it happens. Because we know that people who are more likely to have unwanted pregnancy, teenage pregnancy, all these kind of things come from households where, you know,
the
maybe
resources are less.
Resources are not there.
I just had one more thing to add on this, and this is something I was thinking about during the week. And I don't know how probably not actually coming from where I stand, but everyone's saying, you know, men shouldn't be making laws around women's bodies. But I'm like, if you actually take that precedent, Then are you going to say rich people can't be making laws about poor people? Are they you going to be saying that, you know, so actually
women need to be involved,
that's agreed. Actually the precedent is wrong. It's men need to educate themselves on a topic or whoever.
Well, because a lot of women voted for this.
Yes. I actually think it's that men shouldn't be making laws. It's just that I think that, you know,
ladies,
the empathy.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Between all of the girlfriends, family, friends, friends or friends you have, has there ever been anyone that hasn't been through something that they may or may have not regretted doing at some point their life?
Right.
Whether it's a kiss, whether it's a date,
a night out, whatever it is.
Everybody I know, there is not a single woman, and man as well, by the way, just to say, man as well, that have been in a situation. So who is anyone to judge?
And then you turn around and say, well, that one mistake you made, you're going to have to live with it.
Exactly.
And just one more thing is, and I read this and it was really interesting, the anti-abortion was women should be having sex less, but not men. Like, the women should be having sex. And there was a really big point where it's like, a woman can only get pregnant once in 9 months. A man can impregnate hundreds of people within those 9 months. And you're telling us to stop having sex. Are you mad? Like,
speaking of that.
This is our podcast. Are we still allowed to do that?
Yeah, we can be here for your pleasure, but as long as there's no repercussions.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to ask that. And don't, do not cut that out.
I know. I would never edit you, baby.
It is a free space. And this is really the question. And like I said, this isn't a man hating, quite the opposite actually. I just feel like everyone should be free to do what they want. Desperately believe
jumping on to the comment that you just made, sorry, because I know we're going to move on, we've got a lot to talk about. Did you know that one man's ejaculation, if you collected it for 2 weeks, is enough to impregnate every fertile woman on the planet?
Yeah.
What?
This is what I'm saying.
It blew me away.
Then somehow it's our fault. Right. I want to go on to the next one, and I've been reading up about this, and you know what? I think it's a little bit close to home to all of us as media-facing people that use Instagram and use all of these social tools that open up our lives, really. And a couple of weeks ago now, an Instagram model was murdered by a stalker who then stabbed himself to death afterwards. So the lady's real name is Janae Gagnier.
Okay. I'll go with that.
Yes, I'm going to go with that. She was 33 and she was found dead in her apartment outside of Houston on Sunday by her father. And her father says, what I saw, I wouldn't want any parent to go through. Now, basically, I'm just going to sum up the story. There had been a man stalking this woman, and she was very prevalent on Instagram, OnlyFans, and a couple of different platforms.
Do you want to quickly explain what OnlyFans is for our listeners?
OnlyFans is a locked-off platform that people need to subscribe to, that they can get personal texts and riskier photos than Instagram would allow. And it's become a phenomenon. There's loads of people on OnlyFans. So some of our best friends. And there really is not a stigma around it. And, you know, everyone uses platforms differently and puts their lives out there for whatever benefits and for whatever reasons. However, a rapper then came out and said that, and I've forgotten the rapper's name, so excuse me, but this is the gist of the story. He came out and said that it was her fault and she should have expected to have a stalker if you're going to put yourself out like that, if you're going to be on these platforms, if you're going to be doing all of these things, and that, you know, he doesn't really have any sympathy for her. I think a lot of people came to her defense, but it shocks me how many people think that. And what I want to really discuss with you guys now is not even so much the story itself, but do you think that there is some type of onus on what content you put out and what repercussions you get? And I'm going to just give an example. When Kim Kardashian got robbed in Paris, and every single day she was wearing these jewels worth millions and writing on it, I have millions of dollars. and which is a completely different situation, but I'm just going to give a few out there just so we can get some perspective. You know, in a time where, and a place where there's a huge, huge impoverished areas, some people thought she was baiting. Now, I know when I go away, my parents always say, maybe leave a light on, don't post that you're away just in case so people can come into the house. Yeah. You know, people do take certain precautions. Where is the line with this?
It's tricky, isn't it? It's really not tricky because okay, good examples there.
Yeah, I just wanted to get a range out there.
For sure, because on one hand you've got someone like Kim Kardashian, multimillionaire, showing the jewelry and doing the whole flashy thing just because, not because of anything else. And then you've got this young girl who's on OnlyFans, which is a way of making money.
No, but also, Kim, that's how her business
and
is.
And that's also that her business is creating this lifestyle of elegance and money and wealth. So that actually, she may not be paid. So in a weird kind of way, this is how they both make their money.
This is both of their jobs.
But then where do you draw the line? Because it's like saying, okay, well, if you're an actress, Lau, that means you should never be on telly because, you know, you're going to draw attention to yourself. As in, you could be anybody in any sort of public sphere then. Mm. You don't have to be on an Only. You could just be simply on Instagram as a normal person. Because there's also this misconceived idea that, because, you know, maybe because she was sexual. And you could have a stalker without being any of those things. You could be the most decent person online and doing all the right things, not trying to attract a certain type of attention, but still get... So how
it
do you...
It has very little
it's
to
victim
do around,
blaming, isn't it?
Yeah, this is the thing. It has very little to do around the person that is being stalked and everything to do around whatever is going on in that person's life. Yeah. It's like, you know, rapists often don't pick their target because someone is beautiful or anything like that. It's nothing about that. It's about the power dynamic, right? And, you know, and it's complete victim blaming. And I think that that's so entrenched in the way we discuss stories. Yeah. Sorry, Lau, you go.
Yes. So for me, I want to actually preface this by saying I've learned a lot over the last 5 years working on the radio with Lara, you, about that, because I was very careful with the content I used to post. Mm. And I didn't post any bikini pictures from many, many years ago because I thought it would give the wrong attention. Mm. And then Lara, actually, you taught me that I can post whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter because it's my Instagram and no one has a right to discredit me for anything, no matter what I post. And I'm still struggling with that.
No, but and then I also think when you take on that responsibility, you're taking the onus away from the people that are behaving badly. Yeah. So if someone's going to like attack you and abuse you for being too sexual, it's because their mind is going somewhere else. It's because of what they're doing or everything like that. And when you say, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done this, you're taking the responsibility away from them. And then it will never, ever stop.
Right. Yeah, so through you, I've really learned that it doesn't matter. Having had my share of stalkers, not many, just a few, enough.
That's enough, I was going to say.
Hell out of me.
It is scary.
Enough to scare the hell out of me. Again, I'm going to make it personal, but I will say that... it's been shocking that this woman has been targeted for being on OnlyFans or for being sexual. Also, what is sexual to one person may not be sexual to another person.
But the thing is, and even if she was, that still doesn't justify.
Exactly.
You know, OnlyFans is a specific site. Correct. It's not like she was on, like, you know, your Facebook or your Twitter or just putting things.
So don't go
it's
on
specific,
it then.
Exactly. Yeah. It's specific site that's supposed to be, you know... police and have all the checks, make sure all these kind of things. Of course, it's hard to police the internet. Anyone can get online and do whatever. But
and also, guys, I want to say something just so we understand. This is someone's daughter,
right?
This is someone's cousin.
Yeah.
This is someone's fiance.
Yeah.
This is someone's best friend.
Yeah.
This isn't just
a person
that you look at and go, oh my God, oh, she must be such a hoe in real life.
Yeah, yeah.
This is someone's child, okay?
Yeah.
And whatever path they seem to... How is it any different for any... I'm sorry, that's my opinion.
Mm.
Any Oscar-winning actress to take off her clothes and be in a violent rape scene, okay? Or in a sexual, amazing scene.
It's all performing,
It's a show.
It's everything's
perception.
If
you don't understand that, then that's on you.
And that's on you.
Am I right in saying that?
It is on them, but I think that also that there's these built perceptions around, different sectors. And all of it's constructed, right? Mm. And it's constructed for different reasons, you know?
Unless it comes from
benefit. fit men.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just our values, like the built value system that we have, that, you know, there's good naked and there's bad naked.
Yeah,
correct.
But what people don't realize is, you know, modest in London is not modest in other places. So the way a modest person is looking down on someone else, someone else is looking down on them.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree with that. I do want to move on from the topic. Yeah. I do want to say what's next. What's next for me? I'm shocked by the situation. I'm shocked by murder in general, always, especially if it's a female my age. I just get...
Yeah, you always put yourself straight away.
Exactly, I get the chills. I'm on Instagram. I'm a public person. So it freaks me out. And God bless her and her family. And that's really what I want to say. For the future, everyone, calm down a little bit, okay? Yeah. Just because you see something online may not ever be the truth. You don't know the whole story.
No.
And that's what's next for me. That's just what I want to give away. And I don't mean this in a preachy way, but that is really how I feel. And I'm saying this also for us three, because it's just, we just never know, do we?
And this is our job, you know. This is how we make our money. This is how we... So what's next for me with this situation, and what I hope to be next, is that social media platforms would take, you know, accountability and take ownership and be at the forefront of having checks. And I think we've had this conversation before, especially with the whole football thing about, you know, trolls, internet trolls. It's been conversations that we've been having since the beginning of social media. So what's next for me, I hope, is that her life will not be in vain, and that some laws will be put in place, and that these, you know, giant platforms that have so much power and influence will actually invest in protecting users and having things put in place. Like, you have to get ID. You have, in order to be online. Listen, it's still an option.
Yeah,
it's not compulsory to be
on
an app. Like, it's like a social thing. It's like saying, I'm going to go out tonight, I'm going to stay at home. You don't have to be on there.
It's a really great idea, actually.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, so if you don't want to give your ID to say that, okay, my email is who I say I am, and, you know, this is my ID, sorry, don't be on it. If they feel like that's too much information to share, then so be it. Because I feel like so many people are suffering from these keyboard warriors who have nothing better to do. And it affects people's life. What you say online affects people emotionally, and things like this happen, you know? So I hope that's what's next.
Yeah, and so for me, I think I definitely want to stop the era of victim blaming. We need to change our language that we use. We need to change our viewpoints, and we need to actually target where the pain and stuff that is being caused is coming from. You know, you need to put onus on the perpetrators and not on the victims. And we keep saying this, and we keep seeing it happen, and it needs to change. And it actually starts with a language thing, you know, alleged. And all of those things on how they portray stories. Right, guys, so we have been through two really big topics, and I think we explored them really nicely. And this third one is because we have our guest host in today, Sarah Malindwa, who not only is on a very well-known TV show called The Sex Clinic, but she's also a practicing nurse who was in the hospitals during COVID times. Well, still COVID times, but not lockdown times. And works in a practice, in a clinic, on the Mondays and Tuesdays of every week. And I think you've got a really on-the-ground knowledge for this. So I'm going to let you take it away.
Yes, so there was a news article which you sent me, Lara, actually, and I remember coming across it, but I didn't actually read it properly. And then when you sent it, I opened it up, and it was about this doctor who basically was found, it wasn't even her lunch break. She was on shift, she was on call, she was a senior house officer, and she'd basically gone missing for a couple of hours, and all her colleagues were looking for her. Understandably, there were, you know, patients who need to be discharged and things that need to be signed off and things. And long story short, the matron, I believe, found her sleeping in the ladies' changing room having a nap. And I remember thinking to myself, oh my goodness.
Would that happen ever?
I mean, I've been a nurse.
Have you ever come across
over
that?
14 years. Okay. Let me not lie. I remember when I was back in my early nursing days, put it all out there. We'd go out, and doctors and nurses go out the most. Let me not even lie to you. Yeah. But if it was like a quiet day, if it was like a quiet day on the shift, like someone would get somebody to cover and say, okay, maybe have a little extra half an hour, have a little nap or something. But it would always be that we're well staffed, everyone's covering for everybody, and it would never be like you're a nap. It's just to sort of be like, okay, have a little extra 10-15 minutes.
Yeah.
But to full on have a nap in the middle of a shift as the senior house officer, I've never
So I wanted to ask you, do you think that this warrants as negligence? And what are, and also, do you think the strains that are put on doctors and nurses and responsibilities and caseloads, and, you know, because we hear a lot about the NHS being being understaffed and overworked and all of those sorts of things. Do you think that ties in, or do you think this was a particular person's just going through something?
Having a,
there's times where I can fall asleep standing, like, you know. At first, when I read the headline, I was thinking, at first I thought, okay, this is just the Daily Mail just doing what the Daily Mail does kind of thing, and just like using it as a scapegoat almost, you know, because we see a lot of negative press about the NHS from certain publications who may not, who may be pro selling the NHS, let's just put it that way. And so I always consider my source. However, so first, the first thing I thought was, this is probably somebody, you know, who's overworked and who's just exhausted, basically.
Yeah.
But then reading through the article, it wasn't an isolated incident.
Okay.
There were other, there were other situations where she wouldn't turn up, or she would say she's done things when she hasn't. So there were other factors that came into it. And so that was kind of like almost like a last chance saloon type of thing. However, though, it is a very valid point to make, because I know personally a lot of people, I mean, like you said, Lara, at the beginning, your fabulous intro. You know, I've been a nurse for 14 years, and for the first 5 years of my nursing career, I worked in the hospital. So I was frontline, I was doing the shifts, the weekends, the nights, the long days, the, you know, all of it. And I know how easy it is to get burnt out, let alone, you know, after a pandemic, when a lot of people haven't been allowed to have annual leave, because A, what are you going to do with it anyway? Where are you going to go? And B, we just, you know, we need people on the front line. And so people are absolutely shattered mentally, physically, emotionally, psychologically. And I think there's, because it's interesting now, because life has sort of gone back to normal now, everything's kind of died down. And even myself, when I think back to going back to the front line, it's because you guys were sort of, you're not physically with me, but you were with me on that journey.
Yeah. Oh my God, 100% on me.
Because there's a real, trauma that's happened.
There's a real trauma, absolutely.
I just feel like you went into autopilot.
You do,
So I'm not going to give my opinion on this one, because I have the utmost respect for doctors and nurses, and I don't feel qualified to say anything in terms of whether someone taking a nap. I don't know.
Yeah.
I would say the only way I can think about it is if, God forbid, anything was wrong with my family, my friends, my future child, and someone was to take a nap.
That would
very much, the ripple effect would be horrendous.
And I think that's probably why,
But I'm not, again, I want to make that really clear, I'm not qualified to comment on this, and I have the utmost respect for what everyone does.
And Sarah, what do you think needs to happen in these situations?
In these situations, I think that's when management steps in, and, you know, things like therapy. You know, this is something that she could have a lot of underlying problems going on. She was a doctor, and she would have been a doctor throughout the pandemic. Everyone reacts to different things in different ways. We don't know what psychological effect that could have taken on her. There's so many different things to, you know, to factor in. So I hope more acknowledgement of you know, the needs of NHS workers, because without, you know, the frontline workers, who's going to look after, you know, you need to look after the people who look after the people.
Exactly. Thank you. What a great way to finish. Guys, please let us know what you think. Like, comment, give us stars, and let us know what you think. We're always around for comments, and we're always interested what people think about our show.
And I would also like to say, if anyone has suggestions of the topics that they would like to hear more about, we're really into that, because we want to know what interests you. So we will be back with another guest.
We will. And I want to say a massive thank you to one of our best friends, Sarah Mullindwa. We've been friends for so long.
What,
love
6 years?
You guys.
Seven, yes.
No more. I think nearly.
I know. I stopped counting now.
I stopped counting. Exactly. Oh God, we all signed out on radio, and here we are again. Thank you for listening. Please do follow us, and we shall see you again very soon.